This is Metro Talk with Jerry Phillips, your Sunday morning community radio magazine, bringing communities and people together.
And they are together this morning at the round table, the political, first Sunday political debate, all in-house this morning here on Metro Talk for June 6th, year 2004. Welcome. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, and the Verizon Wireless System. We have many, many topics to cover, so please get online. Our lines are open. If you have comments, if you happen to be talking about something else that you heard us talking about previously, you can always call back, or you can always call, and we'll go back to that topic that we talked about. Anyway, here we are, the Libertarian, Nicholas Sarwark. In fact, I want to introduce yourself.
Good morning, Jerry. I'm Nick Sarwark. I'm from the Libertarian Party.
Eric Michelson from the Green Party.
Patrice McKenney from the Democratic Party.
Emily Leffler, Independent.
Jim Parmley from the Republican Party.
Welcome, everybody. We've got lots of topics to talk about as we look down the list. For instance, the CIA director, George Tenet, steps down. Why? That's a question. Pope John Paul II was diplomatic in his acceptance audience of President Bush and the First Lady last Thursday, but critical of the president. The Times puts it very, very nicely. But anyway, Marion Barry says he's going to run for the city's office of council in Ward 8. And also, what do you think about that? Doug Wilder, will he be the first black mayor of Richmond? Now they have an elected mayor in Richmond. He was the first black governor of Virginia. Boy, we have a lot to cover. 6.5%, well, actually 5.5% unemployment rate, but they didn't budge, although 200,000 more jobs boost the economy. Everybody's waving their hands at that. And Kerry, Democratic presidential candidate, has two honchos on his back. One, Bill Clinton, Ralph Nader, and somebody else. Who else is running?
Now, actually, the Libertarians last weekend nominated.
But not in the primary, the Democrats.
No, not in the primary,
but
the Democrats.
Can you hold your point, please?
I will hold my point.
Thank you very much. You have to keep them in mind, that's all. But in all sincerity, today, Americans, as well as people around the world, do take time out. Whether you liked him or whether you disagreed with him, the fact is that he was quite a pillar in American politics and American history. We speak of the Gripper, Ronald Reagan, 40th president of the United States. And I'm going to turn to my good friend, Jim Pomeroy.
Well, it's a sad day for America, and I think it's a time to look at his historical legacy. And people forget, some people forget, that when President Reagan came into office, America was in retreat around the world. The Soviet communism had moved into Afghanistan. It had moved into Nicaragua. It was moving into El Salvador. It was going to move into Pakistan. We had hostages in Iran. We had lost Vietnam just a few years earlier. We really were in retreat around the world, and people were openly questioning whether which system was better, which system could survive. A lot of folks thought we were on the wrong side of history. And the Gipper came in with an optimistic view that with standing on principle and rebuilding America's defenses and preaching democracy around the world, that we could overcome what was at the time a losing battle. We were losing the Cold War. By the end of his 8 years, we had won it. And I think that is how President Reagan will be remembered. He did nothing less than save America. And I'd also like to mention for the listeners that there's going to be a candlelight memorial service in front of the White House tonight at 6 p.m.
At 6 p.m. in front of the White House.
Right.
I said Gripper. I meant to say Gipper.
Right, in Lafayette.
But then
Park.
Again, he did a lot of gripping, too.
He was a gripping politician.
Gripping politician.
He was a gripping speaker, the great communicator. And he really, I mean, he always said that, you know, he wasn't the great communicator. He had a great message. And I think it was a little bit of both.
Let's go around and talk to everybody from the aisles of politics in our table, round table here. I'll turn to my friend Nicholas Sarwark, who is a Libertarian.
I have to say that Ronald Reagan really turned, I'm not a fan of his foreign intervention, and I think that we could have beaten communism through sheer force of example. I think some of the things that he did in turning our country around from higher domestic spending and higher taxes, more government intervention in our lives, he really was a strong force for liberty and a strong force for common sense in America and making government fit into its proper role as a part of our lives, but not the controller of our lives.
Emily Leffler, Independent.
Well, he was absolutely a turning point, not just in the history of this country and foreign policy, but in the Republican Party, and is noted for moving the party from a more moderate stance to one that resembles much more closely the very conservative party that we see today.
And, of course, Eric Mickelson, Green Party.
Well, you know, I actually have to disagree with Nick about, you know, as far as fiscal responsibility on the part of Reagan and whatnot. I mean, he ran up some of the largest deficits the country had ever seen. And, you know, I think as far as, from my perspective, what are some of the things that we remembered about him? I certainly don't want to, you know, step on his memory. But, you know, selling arms to Iran and then using the money to fund right-wing insurgents in Nicaragua to try to topple a democratically elected government will certainly be one of the things I remember about this president of ours.
Okay. And the Democrat, Patrice McKinney.
I'll say, Jerry, that while there was good and there was bad during the Reagan era, I would say his absolute optimism gave courage and comfort to Americans in a very difficult period in history.
Okay. And let's turn the pages now to page two of our first Sunday politics. You don't have page two. They gave you page two today, Nicholas. Okay. Page two, CIA Director George Tenet steps down. Why? And I'll start with my good friend over here, Eric Mickelson.
Well, I guess the reason that we've been given is that he has family obligations, and I mean, that certainly seems like a potentially reasonable situation. I guess his son's going to be a senior in high school this year, and he wants to spend some time with the family. I guess, you know, another more obvious reason could be the fact of the horrible intelligence failures that have occurred over the past year, including lack of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and all that other, you know, good stuff.
Yeah, Mr. Tenet developed a very strong interest in his family life just about a week before reports were to be made public that implicated himself and his agency in not really doing the job that they were charged with. And I was actually just hoping and waiting for the report that would implicate Rumsfeld. I haven't seen one yet, but I'm waiting for him to get more interested in his family, too.
There had to be a fall guy, Jerry. I mean, the administration is in really big trouble right now. The war in Iraq is going very poorly. George Tenet presented a lot of information that substantiated the war on behalf of the administration. We knew there'd be a fall guy before the election. George Tenet is a logical person. I think it's also interesting, though, that James Pavitt, the director of the U.S. spy agency, has also resigned this week. And I find that to be more than a coincidence.
Well, actually, I think that if you look at the last week, it's been a relatively optimistic week in Iraq. You've got a new government backed by the majority of the population there. Sistani has agreed to back it. You know, I think things are moving on the upswing despite the best efforts of terrorism everywhere. But if you look at the intelligence failures, yes, you know, there were some mistakes in intelligence, quite frankly. That happens. It's happened, you know, throughout the CIA's history, throughout any agency's history. You're not going to get it right all the time, but you know what? We may still find weapons of mass destruction. I think one thing. Don't laugh. One thing people forget is you can hide this stuff very well. Libya did it. A lot of countries have done it. And another thing to remember is Saddam Hussein spent a lot of time trying to convince us that he really did have it hidden. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And that's why we shouldn't invade him. So Saddam Hussein, you know, may have fooled us. He may have convinced us he had weapons of mass destruction, and he's gone now.
Yeah, but you're talking about Saddam Hussein. I asked you about George Tenet.
Well, George Tenet led, you know, his intelligence led to the elimination of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, I think the point here is not whether or not Saddam Hussein fooled us, but whether our own intelligence sources fooled us. And I think that's what brings us back to George Tenet. And we can all sit here and speculate as to why he stepped down, and you know, I think we'll see a lot more as, you know, for that reasoning once those reports come out. But the real question is whether this will satiate the Americans' you know, interest in someone taking responsibility and people looking for a turn in the administration. And, you know, people stepping down and saying, well, I'm going to spend time with my family, doesn't really do a whole lot for people who are looking for someone to step up to the plate and take responsibility for the mistakes that have been made.
Yeah, I think the real concerns about Tenet and his running of the CIA aren't that, you know, he was necessarily willfully malicious, but rather that he wasn't objective at all in his pursuit of intelligence. They were basically looking for people to line up to support a particular theory, you know, the forged Nigerian letter, Chalabi, who had some real interest in making sure we invaded Iraq. A lot of people, they were only listening to one side of the story, and I think that's where the real failure comes down.
Patrice, what does this do for the Bush administration? Is this a good time for him to step down? Will people say, hey, look, Bush is now going to clean up? And will there be others stepping down?
Well, it seems to me that there should be others stepping down. And people have called for the resignation of Cheney and for Rumsfeld now for a number of months, because I think it's quite clear that the administration is in big trouble over the fiasco in Iraq. I mean, I have to ask Jim, you know, where he gets his information that the majority of the Iraqi people are in support of this interim government. Studies that I read coming out of Iraq, the Iraq Center for Research and Strategic Studies, an independent research group out of Baghdad, says that only 22% of the Iraqi people support Alawi. The Iraqi people perceive this interim government as being nothing more than an instrument of the American occupiers. Brahimi himself was just really feeling like he was forced to put this in place by Bremer. And his quote was absolutely outrageous, that Bremer is the dictator of Iraq. Nothing happens without his agreement in this country. I mean, this is not an interim government that is representative of the Iraqi people and what they want. We have Sistani who has endorsed this government, but Sistani is doing that, you know, just as it's a political move. You've got Sadr. 67% of the Iraqi people are backing Sadr.
First of all, we've got the most powerful, respected religious leader in the country supporting the new government. I think we're moving in the right direction. I mean, certainly you're going to have people who are complaining about everything America does.
67% of the people.
Well,
not
you know,
a small percentage.
What's nice is that they can take public opinion polls now, unlike under the old regime that evidently everybody here wanted to leave in power. But
and that opinion poll did not include Najaf or Kufa. So when we add those groups in.
Here's my question for you. First of all, we were putting in the governing council, and you and others complained that we shouldn't have that because the leaders, the true leaders of Iraq, didn't like that. Now we have the most powerful religious leader and leader overall in the country backing this new government. What more do you want?
I'm not sure Sistani is the overall leader.
Read the paper.
I know what I want. What I want is I want the Iraqi people backing the new government. I mean, Al Gore backed Howard Dean in the presidential primary, and guess what?
Well, you
that
wanted
didn't get
to,
the people
you
anywhere.
Want, hold tight, Jim. Let me ask Eric to get out of this. Eric, yesterday there was a big rally downtown at Lafayette Park across from the White House. That rally, sponsored by ANSA, which many say is a very radical group, but still they have alleys of thought and ideologies that some people agree with. They called for the troops to come home. They called for also that we get out of Iraq and let the Iraqi people run their own country. Comment on that.
Right. Well, just to go to the answer issue real quickly, it just happens to be the group that's getting the permits. Again, just because the people are there doesn't necessarily mean they agree with the whole message of answer itself. Obviously, folks like Nick and other libertarians and whatnot who are there have almost no common cause except for this issue. But the issue of getting troops out of Iraq, I think, is one that's shared by a lot of Americans, you know, whether it be either, in Nick's case, just getting troops out and not trying to replace them or trying to replace them with UN troops, in the perspective of some people such as myself. I think that there are a lot of Americans who hold that view and would like to see American troops out of Iraq.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon Wireless System. Some of the topics we are discussing this morning as we take a look at what's happening with the president and the resignation of George Tenet, the director of CIA, and how the fallout will affect certainly the Bush White House. Let's talk with Steve in Fairfax. 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon. It's the telephone number if you'd like to get online. We have lines open. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I'd like to comment about Mr. Tenet and about intelligence and the veracity and correctness of intelligence throughout some of recent history. Your guests who laughed about the veracity of trying to establish a government in Iraq are totally ignorant of World War II history. And if we look at simply D-Day, the mistakes that were made, the mistakes in history of intelligence that were made in D-Day, and did we have pundits like we have on your show today who say, well, the intelligence fooled us. Intelligence is at best good for perhaps 50%. And when you're looking at someone like Saddam Hussein, who was proven to have weapons of mass destruction, who used them on his own people, and there were mistakes that were made, obviously. There were mistakes that were made going into D-Day. There were mistakes that were made in the Pacific Theater when we were trying to take some of those islands. Horrendous mistakes that cost us many lives. They weren't trying to fool people or lie to people. And please understand that Iraq today now has the possibility of a free and direct and open government. You just don't go in and hand people who have conflicting points of view a government and have cause for civil war.
Okay,
what you try to do is you try to establish some sort of common ground, and that's what we're trying to do, and it's chaotic.
Okay, Steve, thank you very much. Hold your line, please. Let's go around and get answers to the pundits.
Well, Jerry, the problem isn't necessarily with intelligence that is fooling people. It's those who are stovepiping intelligence that pertains directly to their agenda, to the top of the administration, to enforce policies to be put in place to back them up, to fool the American people. The State Department's own Bureau of Intelligence did not support the idea that weapons of mass destruction existed in Iraq before we went in there. There was plenty of intelligence throughout the board, throughout various intelligence agencies, but you had groups like the Office of Special Plans and the Defense Department who stovepiped faulty intelligence directly to the top. There was no across-the-board debate or discussion, and this is what fooled the American public. The people that were in power who were, you know, getting that information to the top and, you know, not relying on viable sources.
I'd second that, and I agree with the listener completely. It's not a matter of faulty intelligence, and intelligence is at best 50% of the situation. However, the use of that intelligence and the way it can be used to further one agenda or another is what we're looking at. And in fact, as I recall, wasn't it George Tenet that went to President Bush in the beginning of the year and said, do not make those statements about weapons of mass destruction in your State of the Union address?
State of the Union,
we
yeah.
do not have corroborating evidence of
right,
that.
Right, right. But there was an agenda there, and I'll go to, let me go to Jim Pomeli on this, okay, Jim?
You know, of all of these
Thanks,
intelligence.
Steve, for your call.
I mean, if intelligence was so bad, it's an awful shame that John Kerry got fooled because he voted for the Iraq War, too, as did just about everybody else. So it's very easy to sit back here in armchair quarterback. But, you know, the Secretary of State believed there were weapons of mass destruction. All the major intelligence agencies of the world believe there were weapons of mass destruction. Armchair court. What, I watched the speech to the UN. And it was just about unanimous across the government. Across
they found a truck.
You know, send your complaints to the Secretary of State who made an honest assessment.
To ignore his own intelligence bureau, the Bureau of Intelligence and the State Department put out their own white paper saying they did not agree and support
this
that intelligence.
This might surprise you.
And, you know, let's see what we've found.
This might surprise you. The Secretary of State outranks them. And he made an excellent presentation, and he made an honest presentation.
Nicholas
you know, we're not always right.
Nicholas Sala, that's true. That's Nicholas Sala.
No one is always right.
I have a question for Jim, and I guess this question is also a little bit for the
Very
caller.
Quickly, folks, we've got to move on.
Jim, do you remember the presidential debates for last election cycle?
Sure.
Do you remember George Bush getting on TV and asking where this nation-building department was and what constitutional authority there was for that?
You may remember an event that happened after those debates, 9/11.
9/11 has nothing to do with that.
9/11 made George Bush God. Don't you remember that, Nick?
Well,
I must have forgotten.
Yeah, that'll get you to vote for him.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon Wireless System. Speak up, Americans, because we have here in the studio those who really speak for many of the ideologies that make up our political society. You like that? Write that stuff down, please, quick. That was ad lib. Anyway, Nick, hey, you've got... Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Jim Homily, Republican, Independent, Emily Leffler, and Patrice McKinney, the Democrats are on high, and Eric Mickelson, the Green Party, has Ralph Nader. Is he a threat to Kerry or not?
Well, The issue actually is, it's interesting. We had our convention in Maryland yesterday, and half the delegates are going to be going to support David Cobb, who's a Green Party candidate from California, and the other half are going basically to support a...
So that's split within the Green Party.
There is, you know, sort of a little bit of...
Why doesn't Ralph Nader hide himself for a while?
Why should he hide himself? He's the only candidate who's come out... Strong. Well, I'm sorry, Nick. I don't want to preempt a libertarian candidate, but he's the only of the three candidates that I know their platforms who's come out for withdrawing U.S. troops within 6 months. Mm, right. Who isn't into empire building? Who isn't doesn't want to jack up the size of the military? And who would like to see, among other things, you know, universal health care for Americans, living wages. He's talking about things that are just not even on the radar screen for Bush or Kerry.
Patrice, I'm coming to you. Don't worry, I'm coming to you for your candidate. But Patrice, Kerry did say he would like to send more troops.
Absolutely. And here we all spoke in favor of Ronald Reagan, who showed that, you know, building up a strong military is a way to ensure peace.
I didn't speak in favor of that, Patrice.
This is rough.
The majority of our panelists spoke in favor of former President Ronald Reagan.
I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. Norman in Leesburg, Virginia, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I was listening to your pundits, and it really upsets me when pundits state facts that aren't facts. One of them talked about George Tenet telling George Bush not to put the W and D part in his speech. That's not what happened. George Tenet was, first of all, didn't tell him not to do it, but what he was objecting to was the fact of the uranium find in Africa, which was not even our intelligence. It was British intelligence. So George Tenet never told George Bush never to talk about WMD. Second of all, George Tenet said it was a slam dunk there were WMD in Iraq. Third of all, they talk about stovepiping an agenda. Well, the person who led that agenda most vociferously before Bush was Clinton. So, you know, if the agenda was furthered by anybody, it was furthered by Clinton and Congress, who voted through a resolution to take action, remove Saddam Hussein. So talking about all this intelligence and stovepiping it to your own purposes, well, the purpose had existed before George Bush got into office. Thank you.
Okay, sir. Thank you. And let's turn to Emily Leffler, the Independent.
This is an interesting turnaround from other critics of Clinton who stated that he didn't do enough in the Middle East. But I think the agenda that I was talking about was more the neoconservative agenda that's pushed by folks like Rumsfeld and Cheney and Wolfowitz and Douglas Feith and, you know, a number of other people there from groups like the Project for the New American Century, who have this idea that they can strategically reorder the Middle East by creating a democracy in Iraq. That's what, and they've been wanting to do this since, you know, the early 90s. And that's when this opportunity came along as a result of 9/11, and they decided they could link Saddam Hussein to al-Qaeda. Everything was stovepiped to the top to prove that link and that they were an imminent threat, and it's just all faulty.
We'll have to turn to some local issues in just a second, but one question. Pope John Paul II is in Switzerland. He spoke well of Ronald Reagan this morning, which was pretty much a highlight of the pontiff's own career, that is, the fall of communism, the wall and all. But the Pope did not speak so well about Iraq right in front of the face of President George Bush. In addition to that, although the Bush administration presented the Pope with a very interesting presentation award, a medal, the Pope still is somewhat concerned about the rebuilding of Iraq. He's glad to see that there's going to be a government set up, but he's concerned about the rebuilding of Iraq. How does this play on the White House? Because George Bush has had turbulent times with the Vatican over this whole Iraq thing. Yeah.
Well, I think you might be overstating. I think that the Pope wants to go the same direction that the President Bush does. He just wants quickly to get troops out of there. George Bush does not want to keep troops in Iraq forever. What we want to do is stabilize the country and leave. That is what America did in World War II. That is what America has done through history. We go in, we liberate, we stabilize, and we leave. That is the difference between us and everyone else.
Anybody else? Well, the panel's quiet.
What about, Korea? Have we left yet?
We tried, and we'd love to, but the North Koreans will be right behind us.
301-230-0980.
Which answer support?
So far we didn't liberate
you're
or
stepping on the host.
I apologize. I got worked up.
Line right now. anyway, 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon. John in Vienna, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, the gentleman just touched on what I was going to bring up. There's obviously a great anti-Bush sentiment in the presence in Iraq, but I would quickly remind you that the last time I checked, we were still involved in Bill and Madeline's little wars in Bosnia and Kosovo. I know that personally, having been there. Korea is another example of where we still are, and you can say the North Koreans would follow, but that's probably true. But more importantly, what I would like to ask all your panel is, how many of you have ever had to use functional on-the-ground intelligence? Do you really think 50% of it is intelligence that is provided pre-action? If you do, you're sorely mistaken. And I would also like them to discuss why everything that we are talking, with the exception of North Korea, is really minuscule in comparison to some of the areas in Asia that we've been involved in, Cambodia and Pol Pot, and the level of activity generated by the government to help them is virtually non-existent compared to anything that involves the Middle Eastern oil or anything Anglo-Saxon in nature. Thank you.
Okay. Right. Well, the caller brings up some very good points, and I think the issue with intelligence is I don't think anyone at the roundtable would be surprised that sometimes there are intelligence failures. Again, Tennant had said that it was a slam dunk that there were weapons of mass destruction. Presumably, that's more than just sort of an educated guess. I mean, and the claims that were being made by the administration seemed to suggest that they knew exactly where they were as soon as they were given the orders to go in, that they would find them. So I think it wasn't just merely, you know, a routine failure of intelligence, which people might expect. It was a pretense for an entire war. I just want to talk real quickly to the issue of going into Iraq versus not going into these other hotspots. I think the caller brings up a good point. Again, if you look at Nigeria, there are horrendous atrocities going on there. There are other places around the world where, in fact, a peacekeeping force or some kind of group that could go in and stabilize those areas would be, you know, well situated.
Nicholas Solwalk, I've got to turn to you. Make your announcement. A new candidate on the scene, folks, for the United States presidential election coming up. A new candidate from the Libertarian side of the issue.
Over Memorial Day weekend, the Libertarian Party met in convention in Atlanta, which is a beautiful city, and we nominated Michael Badnarik, who's a...
Michael Badnarik,
B-A-D-N-A-R-I-K.
Mm-hmm.
He's a software engineer from Texas. It was a very tight three-way race between... He is from Texas. He's against the war in Iraq. Mm-hmm. He's against the Patriot Act. He's for civil liberties. He's against having our troops in 140 countries around the world. He wants to support our troops and bring them home. He wants to lower government spending and basically focus on restoring the freedoms of Americans to be good Americans.
So,
and not so much on trying to shove Americanism down the throats of people around the world.
So we'll be hearing his name in headlines in days.
Yes, you will. He is the opportunity to actually have a real choice in this election. I hope a lot of
people
take a look
at him. Jim, why do you roll your eyes at Nicholas while he's saying this? Nicholas is very...
I have a lot of respect for him, but I would point out that the presidential election is basically a two-man and perhaps with Ralph Nader a three-man race. And I think the Libertarians, Libertarians should support President Bush, because he is
a libertarian thing President Bush has done.
Far superior. He's cut taxes.
Raised spending.
Deficits.
You know, and my Green Party friend over here loves spending and deficits, or at least his party has in the past, so he should vote for...
Yeah, but you're talking to me,
we're on the opposite side of the spectrum.
You're talking to me, Jim.
I am, and I would say that President Bush is cutting taxes, and...
Let me explain. Jim is Republican, and Nicholas is Libertarian.
Yes, and I would think that when you are faced with a choice between President Bush and John Kerry, John Kerry disagrees with you on the issues. Well, remember, John Kerry supports the Patriot Act, supported the Patriot Act that you don't like.
Can I give a quick response to Jim? Kerry and Bush agree on the Patriot Act. They agree on the war in Iraq. They agree on the thought that we may actually need a draft. Ooh. They agree on putting sick people in jail who try to use medical marijuana under state law. They agree on increased government spending. They agree on gun control. Frankly, on all those issues.
Bush agrees on gun control?
Yes, Bush supports the assault weapons ban, the extension of the Clinton assault weapons ban. He's come out publicly and stated he's just waiting for the bill to hit his desk. He has done nothing to roll back gun control with a Republican Congress.
You know that George Bush, who's in Europe right now, just leaving the Pope, now over there for D-Day, when he gets back and the bill gets on his Oval Office
desk,
if it
gets on his
desk,
he said publicly he will sign it. So for me, based on those issues, I don't have a choice in this election. I think a lot of the American people don't have a choice.
Nick is right, and and you know President Bush is reaching out to the left on this one, I think. But, and I think it's a poorly named
bill. To the people who don't like assault weapons.
It is a poorly named bill.
Mike on his cell phone in Vienna. Good morning. Save me, please. Go right ahead, Mike.
Somebody save Jerry here.
Mike, are you there?
Yes. My question is for the Republican panelists, but I'd like to frame it first. I don't know if anybody remembers, but when General Shiseki was the chief of the Army, basically said we needed 250,000 troops. He was pretty much disgraced by Donald Rumsfeld because Donald Rumsfeld never showed up to the man's retirement ceremony at the Pentagon. The man had given 35 years of service. And my question is, General, people have made mistakes during D-Day and past wars, but the general arrogance showed by the Secretary of Defense and Wolfowitz have cost American lives. He pretty much changed the way deployments were done, and this has cost American lives. Why hasn't there been a bigger push, even within the Pentagon or from the administration, to make Rumsfeld resign?
Okay, Mike, hold the line. Let's get Lisa in D.C. on the line. Lisa, meet Mike and the rest of the panel.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Go right ahead.
I want to point out something that goes much further back than any of your panelists talking about. Is the fact that I feel the intelligence service, CIA, failed as far back as Iran and to predict that it ought to see what situations existed that brought about that debacle in that country. As far as Reagan goes, people have no memory again. The deficits he left in California and left here in Washington, D.C., people don't remember about. People don't remember that Cheney personally went to the CIA several times. And at that point, it was reported in some of the press locally, and it seemed as though his troops out there were to be sure that the intelligence was to his liking.
Okay.
And Rumsfeld is also the one who has talked about smaller military, mm-hmm. especially smaller army, and he was insisting on that when generals told him, no, it's not going to work. Nobody will point that out.
Okay,
he's
Lisa.
Made serious mistakes.
Okay, Lisa, let me get feedback from Mike and we'll move on. Mike?
Yes?
Did you hear what Lisa said?
Yes, I did. I have a lot of friends in the military, and I got to tell you, he's not well-liked. And it's not because mistakes have been made, but it's the general arrogance of pretty much dismissing people. And pretty much what the other panelists had said, pretty much dismissing people who don't support his point of view. When you're in a leadership position, you need everyone's point of view to make a good decision. And frankly, his decisions have disastrously cost American lives.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much. Lisa, thank you. We want to get various viewpoints, as many as possible, on telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, the Verizon Wireless System, along with Eric Nicholson, Green Party, Democrat Patrice McKinney, Independent Emily Leffler, and Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Republican Jim Pomeli. This is Metro Talk at our first Sunday political debate. Craig in Alexandria, good morning to you, my friend.
Good morning. I'm calling because I'm astounded by some of these views that you guys have against the war in Iraq and stuff. And I work for the government and I used to be a military and everything. I don't look at this from the standpoint that you guys are saying this is all a political thing. I look at it from the Iraqi people's side of the house that, you know, that these people needed to be liberated. These people were under a tyrant. You know, look at it from the chivalrous point of view and, you know,
Okay.
How we went in there and we helped all these people and we did a service. Why not use the power that we have to go in there and help people?
Okay, let's hear from Eric and Nicholas. Thank you very much, Greg, for your call.
Jerry, I think this is interesting. This caller, I think the sort of position that he's talking about is one of the great tragedies, I think, again, of this war, is that this administration has used the goodwill of people like this gentleman and people who firmly believe that, you know, in the idea of spreading American freedom and vitality across the world as sort of like the underlying reason for doing this war, when in fact I think many of us feel like it's much more cynical, that, you know, there are lots of other rationales that have been in the works for years and years that have nothing to do with, or very little to do with, freeing the Iraqis from a tyrant.
The question that I would have for the caller and anyone that uses this line of reasoning is, where in the Constitution is our government authorized to use our power to send our brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers over to die to save other countries? Where is that a legitimate function of our government to fix other countries? I don't see it in the Constitution.
Well, I guess Nick wouldn't have fought World War II or World War I.
No, we were attacked.
World War II.
Come on, Jim, we shouldn't
have gone over there and liberated Europe.
You had to, Jim. I mean, what are you going to do?
You know, that at the time, the debate was
World
we should
War
stay
II.
Out of it.
Well,
there was
no.
a Nick
World
and
War,
Nick's no. friends of the period debated would have
World
debated
War
that
II.
We stay out of it.
World,
none of our business.
Excuse me, Jim Pomeroy, Republican. World War II, there were factions that would have really threatened us. The thing over Iraq, all I hear is about terrorism.
Liberating.
I don't know if Jim remembers, but the Japanese offered a preemptive strike against us in World
right.
War II. Remember that, Jim?
Yes, I do. And which was the 9/11. We've had 9/11 now.
On,
in Pearl Harbor then.
Jim,
it woke up the people like Nick who
Jim.
Would not fight for, as the British said back then, we
Jim.
Will not fight for king
Osama
or country. We'll let everyone
Iraqi.
In Europe die.
Can we remember this, please? There is no link. The administration has said, finally, there is no link.
You know, Saddam.
This has nothing to do with 9/11.
Saddam was doing a mild. A decent impression
Al.
Of Adolf Hitler.
Excuse me. Let's go to Al. Al, are you in Arlington? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go right ahead, my friend.
Well, somebody on your show about 5 minutes ago mentioned putting marijuana smokers in jail.
Yes.
I don't know if it should be legal or not, but you're not good for your health.
Okay.
And neither is tobacco, and neither is going along with every fad that comes along because you want to be fashionable, wasting your life with alcohol and things like that.
Thank you very much.
I have to say I completely agree with the caller, and I'm sure that I agree with him as well, that putting people in jail isn't any better for their health, and that our scarce government resources and tax dollars could probably be better used to fight crime or do things that would be more productive for the American people than chasing down some pot smokers.
Ladies and gentlemen, every time we do the first Sunday Roundtable Politics, there is one person on this panel that a certain caller really has a very special feeling for. She's a Republican, she says. Is she a Democrat? Well, we'll find out in a second. But anyway, we're going to present none other than our P1. In broadcast, P1 means, hey, follow her all the way. Here she is, Pat Alexandria in Alexandria. Pat in Alexandria.
Good morning, darling.
Good morning, darling. Hold on, Pat. I think the Metro Talk Orchestra is trying to get it together for you.
Give me a break. But for one point of clarification for one member of your panel, I was one of the original teenage Republicans in New York State. I was on the New York State Republican Committee. I ran a couple of Republican campaigns that won. Does the name John Dunn do anything for you?
Mm.
Now, that's settled. Calmly and quietly. You know, does anybody remember the Lusitania? That wasn't a 9/11. It was a German torpedo. Does anybody remember Pearl Harbor? Those were Japanese planes, not terrorists in a plane, in an aircraft thing. Mr. Parmley is finding ways to justify God knows what. And I'm sure if we have a recession, it's going to be because of terrorists. Get a grip. We do not belong in Iraq. Nicholas is quite correct. The Constitution doesn't allow it. Wonderful comment, Nicholas. I think it's great. Whenever Mr. Parmley said, we go in, we free them, we leave. Anybody remember Somalia? We freed nobody.
We tried at the loss of American lives.
We tried very hard in an area where we had no strategic interest. It was a humanitarian mission.
Riding over the caller.
The other comment I would like to make, and I was quite fond of President Reagan, so this is no comment against him. Excuse me, he didn't free the hostages in Iran. They were let go 10 minutes before the inauguration because they thought they had a bargaining chip on the new president.
Well, I point out that he saved America.
He's rewriting history.
I didn't say he freed the hostages, although I'm sure that him coming into the... I'm sure the Ayatollahs did not want to deal with him as opposed to Carter. But that's not what I said. I said that Ronald Reagan saved America. That's what I said.
God, you know, it's wonderful that we have every Republican to save this country after the Democrats have driven it down into the dirt. I think it's amazing, Mr. Parmley. And the next time that you have a messiah come through... I'll be more than happy to vote for him. What we need in this country are people who think of this country first, not of their own political agendas, not of what makes them look right. And frankly, three cheers for the Pope.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one, darling. And Nicholas, you're terrific.
Thanks,
Pat.
Love you, Pat. Thank you very much.
Well, Pat and I agree on something. Nick's terrific.
Okay, guys. Let's pull the curtain. Page three. You got page three over there?
Page three.
We've got to talk about this. Marion Barry, the former mayor of the District of Columbia, who was a good mayor for a while, but ended up as a mayor on the front pages in question. Anyway, says he'll run again in the city's poorest ward, which is Ward 8. He says that the city's schools, the police department, everything is to shambles. And as far as he's concerned, the city needs, quote-unquote, leadership. He said that on NBC television. To my good buddy Tom Sherwood. Tom Sherwood's the only one to get anything out of Marion Barry. But anyway, moving ahead, what do you think Marion Barry will bring to the table, and is he really serious about running? Because he's a darn good expert as messing with the media and the headlines. And I'll start with the Democrats, since Marion Barry is a Democrat.
Marion Barry is serious about running, it seems. And he wants to get back into politics. The city needs leadership, yes. The schools are in a difficult position right now. The police department, we have some trouble in Washington, D.C. Whether Marion Barry has the credibility to provide the kind of leadership that we actually need.
Now, he's not running for mayor.
No, mm-hmm. I know. Even as a city council member, whether he has the credibility to pull that off is, I would say, open to question.
Okay. He didn't do too well in Ward 8 last time. But anyway, Emily, you look like you're freezing over this whole idea of Marion Barry running for office.
Well, you know, he's come out with bigger surprises for us in the past, so I don't know that we should doubt it yet. But, all I can say is I think it would be nice to see some fresh leadership with some new ideas on how to turn things around in the city.
Ah, the Green Party wants to run Ralph Nader Jr. for mayor for city council.
I'm not sure if there's someone running in Ward 8 or not, but I mean...
Yes, Sandy Allen, she's doing very well.
Oh, excellent. Okay, well... You know, I think,
not that Marion wouldn't do well.
No, but I think we shouldn't really beat around the bush. Marion Barry is really an embarrassment to Washington, D.C. There may have been a time when he was a respectable political figure, but that was before I was born. And I think that, you know, he basically gives everyone, either in Congress or outside the city, a reason to think less of D.C. and think that the residents of Washington, D.C. aren't fit to rule themselves.
Marion Barry has two real main thrusts of the problems with Marion Barry. So the first thrust is the personal issues. He's been on camera smoking crack. He had to cancel his last bid for a district position because he allegedly had drugs found in his car in the middle of Rock Creek Park.
That's
one thrust. Marion
said last week in the newspapers that the United States Park Police put the drugs in his car down at...
Rock Creek Park.
No, it wasn't Rock Creek Park. It was
Haynes Point.
Buzzards Point. Where nobody goes but buzzards that hover over the Anacostia River at 2 o'clock in the morning.
The more important thrust is the sort of leadership that Marion Barry brought to the city was a leadership in corruption, in graft, in patronage, in cronyism, giving jobs to his friends,
what corruption?
Overbid contracts.
No. Marion Barry walked away from. They tried to find everything they could to hang on the man's shoulders. I'm not defending him.
Ward 8 didn't do too well under his leadership last time.
Excuse me, you jumped the gun. I'm telling you to your statement. The man, he might have been a shady character as far as his personal character and things like that, but Marion. You can't find one thing on the books that Marion did that was shaky when it came to contracts or government money. Yes, sir, Jim Palmer.
I think Jerry and I are the only people here on this panel who were in D.C. during the Barry administration. And I will agree with you, Jerry. He did not personally profit from
this. He ran government.
But there was a lot of corruption. I mean, you know, Marion Barry had some good
points. But he didn't have his hands
right. on. Personally, he didn't take the money himself. Right. And we certainly give him credit for that. And I do. I mean, seriously.
Palmer,
he wasn't personally corrupt. But his administration was corrupt.
Well, he had a lot of shady characters.
The Republicans would love to see Barry run again.
They would.
Yeah, because
wonderful
entertainment.
Because then they'll vote for Anthony Tony Paparone Williams. Now, moving ahead. Doug Wilder is running for mayor of Richmond. How do you feel about that, Emily? Never mind. Well, Patrice, he's a Democrat. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think Doug Wilder, will go ahead and run for governor of Richmond. I think he's going to probably win if he does, and I think he'd make a good mayor for the city of Richmond.
Okay, why would he make a good mayor? Jim Palmley, you're from Northern Virginia, and Northern Virginia doesn't like Richmond, let alone you're liking a Democrat in the seat.
You know what?
Against a Republican General Assembly out of Richmond that fights all the time.
Write this down. I like Doug Wilder. And I campaigned against him in 1989 when he ran for governor. I volunteered and worked with Marshall Coleman. And I'll tell you, in the years since, he has become a fiscal conservative. He opposed Governor Warner's tax hikes. And I think that he's would be a very responsible, very strong governor. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in Richmond. But Doug Wilder really has moved to the right over the years, and I congratulate him.
Charles in Silver Spring, good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if any of y'all remember that Reagan said that the economics at the time were bad because of education. And one of the things he wanted to implement in education was Drug Awareness Week. And before that was implemented, there was less drug users, and now there's more drug users than ever were before. And my second point, and I'll hang up and listen, is in all those wars, why don't we ever discuss the history of the black market trade that was disrupted by the war? Because in Afghanistan, they were our second largest importer of heroin. And we just, tackled that problem head on.
Okay, thank you.
They still are.
Can we look to the drug experts here on the panel?
Oh, it's me.
Oh, thanks,
Dare
the marijuana boy.
Dare was the most ill-conceived government program ever that gave our children false information about the real dangers, and there are real dangers to using drugs, but greatly sensationalized them and grew up an entire generation of children who realized that their government had lied to them about drugs. Secondly, encouraged children to rat out their parents, thereby destroying the American family.
Let me ask you guys a yes or no. We have about a minute and a half left, and the question is, the unemployment rate, it still remains the same. What is it, 5 point something?
5.8.
And despite of that, they're now talking about the 200,000 jobs that will change the economy, and this looks like it's a rebound. I'll start with Jim Palmley, the Republican. Yes or no? Is it a rebound?
The economy is getting better, no doubt about it.
Nicholas Sawalk?
Despite the best efforts of the president, the economy is getting better.
It appears by these traditional economic indicators that the economy is improving.
I would have to agree. However, everything is relative, and we are looking at an economy that's improving over something that was absolutely, absolutely horrendous.
Emily Leffler?
Well, I think you can have all the numbers you want, but until the American people really start to feel a difference at home and in their wallets and in their future, then that's when it's going to affect the election, which is what we're talking about.
All right, guys, we have lots more to talk about next week. I want to thank you very, very much for certainly Nicholas Sawalk, Jim Palmley, Emily Leffler, Patrice McKinney, Eric Mickelson.